He was laughing at me. You know good and well he's not conceited. He can't help it if he's good-looking. To tell the truth, I don't think he knows he is. You're jealous, Brian, because Angela dumped you to make a play for Curtis, and he was smart enough to leave her alone. You can think what you want, I said, but I was almost laughing myself. Mark knew me pretty well. Sometimes that could be irritating, but most of the time, it was funny. Charlie's car wasn't anything you'd stop and stare at, but it was decent looking. I felt funny when I stopped in front of Kathy's house. I had always thought of it as M&M's house, and now I thought of it as Kathy's house. I had never paid any attention to M&M's parents, and I was about to go crazy trying to remember if I had ever said anything rude or had got smart with them, but I couldn't remember. If I had, I hoped they wouldn't remember. Kathy's father opened the door. He said, "Hi, Brian," friendly enough. I guess as friendly as any father ever greets the kid who's taking out his daughter. So I figured I was safe. M&M was lying on his stomach on the floor reading a book with a little sister sitting on his back pulling his hair. I stepped over him. When M&M was reading, you could blow up the house around him and he'd never notice. I'm that way myself. Kathy's mother came from the kitchen, wiping her hands on her apron. And in the kitchen, some more little kids were fighting over who was going to rinse and who was going to dry.
"Kathy will be ready in a minute," Mrs. Carlson said. "Please sit down, Brian. We haven't seen you in a while."
"I've been out looking for a job," I said, sitting down on a rubber duck. "Mark and I run into M&M every now and then." "How can you tell him and Kathy apart?" Mr. Carlson said dryly. "I can't anymore."
"Now, Jim," Mrs. Carlson began nervously, "we agreed not to say any more about M&M's hair."
Even his own family called him M&M.
I tried to remember for a second what his real name was, but I couldn't think of it.
In the silence, Kathy screeched,
"You give me that brush, you brat!"
I stifled a laugh.
"How have you been doing in school, Brian?"
Mrs. Carlson asked. She was pretending she hadn't heard Kathy. This was the usual routine questioning you go through when you have to talk to your date's parents, but I didn't mind. At Angela's house, her mother and stepfather were always fighting and screaming and throwing things, and sometimes her brothers, Tim and Curly, would get in on it, and I'd sort of duck flying objects until Angela came out of her room, cussing and throwing things along with the rest of them. So you can see why sitting in the Carlson's front room answering questions wasn't really bothering me. "I'm doing pretty well in school," I answered. "Mostly A's and B's." I decided I wouldn't say anything about flunking chemistry. The teacher and I had a personality conflict, and when I want to cause a teacher trouble, you'd better believe I can do it. "M&M is flunking math and gym," Mr. Carlson said in the same tone he had used when talking about M&M's hair. "How anyone can flunk gym is beyond me." I could tell that M&M was listening to the conversation, but was staring at his book, pretending he wasn't. I understood what he was doing. I've stared at a book, pretending I couldn't hear what was going on around me, too. If people think you can't hear them, they talk as if you couldn't. You can hear some pretty neat stuff that way. "It's not as if M&M was an invalid," Mr. Carlson was saying when Kathy came out of her room.
"I'm ready," she said.
She had on a yellow pants outfit that looked real cute on her. I got up. "Okay, let's go." On the way out, she gave M&M a friendly kick. When we were in the car, she said,
"I wish Daddy would leave M&M alone. He's so sensitive, it hurts him for Dad to tease him about his hair or bawl him out for his grades. It seems to me they should be glad about his other grades. His English teacher says M&M has the most brilliant mind she's come across in 5 years of teaching, and be glad he's never gotten into any kind of trouble, instead of picking at him because of his hair."
She sighed.
"I guess since M&M and I are the oldest, we're the closest.
I guess you know about that, though. I forgot you have a brother, too." "Yeah, I know about that," I said. Of course, I never heard Mom gripe about anything Mark did. He could get away with things I wouldn't dare try. I never resented Mark for this. I took it as a matter of fact that Mark was different from other people, and was therefore treated differently. Kathy sighed.
Well, I'm not going to worry about it now. I want to have a good time tonight.
She gave me a quick, shy smile. She was sitting close enough for me to put my arm around her, which I did. I was intending to have a good time, too. We could hear the music even before we got there. The band was supposed to be a good one. It was loud enough, which, with a dance, is at least half the way to being good. I was really proud of having such a cute date, and I was hoping Angela would be there. I wanted to show her up. I'd gone with Angela for months, longer than I'd ever gone with anyone. I wanted to show her that I had no intentions of going back to her. She'd been telling everybody that I would. This was after she had made her big play for this Curtis kid, and he had acted like he didn't know she was alive. Then she decided she wanted me back. You can imagine how that grabbed me. The dance was going pretty good when we got there. I liked to arrive a little late, when things were swinging. I saw a bunch of people I knew. Kathy knew a lot of people too, but not very well. She hadn't dated before she left for school, and I don't think anyone remembered her. She had been a shy, plain kid. Everybody was staring at us, wondering who she was. I was feeling really great. I liked being the center of attention. Kathy winked at me. She dug it, too. I really liked her. I liked her a lot. "Hey, Brian!" It was Mark. I could tell even before I spotted him across the room, waving at us. "Come on," I said. "Let's go see Mark." We weaved in and out of the crowd, sometimes stopping to talk. I wasn't too happy when I saw that Mark and Curtis were standing together. Having had one girl ditch me to try for him, I wasn't thrilled with the possibility that it might happen again.
"Hi, Kathy," Mark greeted her.
He had been drinking, but I doubt that anyone but me could tell.
"I haven't seen you in a long time."
"I haven't been here to see," Kathy answered sensibly.
"I don't think you know Ponyboy Curtis. This is Kathy Carlson."
"Hi," Curtis said. He didn't look too happy. I think he had heard I wasn't crazy about him. He was a little guy, about the same size as Mark, only with a better build. I think he thought I was going to pick a fight with him. I didn't want to. I guess he couldn't help what Angela Shepherd did, and besides, I'd heard he was a pretty good fighter, even though he didn't have the rep of a tough guy. I watched Kathy. She didn't seem interested in him. The first time Angela saw him, her eyes lit up like a tiger's. So I relaxed. "Where'd you get the booze?" I asked Mark when Kathy couldn't hear. He grinned.
"Out in the car. Terry's car. He's got 6 six-packs, and only the 4 of us to drink them. Go out and help yourself. Terry won't mind. He's already passed out in the front seat."
Terry had always been a drinker. I decided I'd go out later and have a couple of cans. Maybe I'd get a couple for Kathy. I hoped she wasn't a very heavy drinker. Angela had got pretty expensive with her constant boozing. Kathy and I watched Mark and Curtis as they started toward a group of girls. "Mark's a good kid," I said.
"I'd forgotten how beautiful he is," Kathy said. "I know girls who would give their eye teeth for hair that color."
I stopped breathing for a second.
Kathy was looking at Mark, and I suddenly felt like I'd swallowed a spoonful of red pepper. I felt cold and hot and sick and mad all at once. I only felt it for a second, only for a second, and then it was gone. But sometimes now, I wonder how it would be to feel like that all your life. You know what the crummiest feeling you can have is? To hate the person you love best in the world.
"Hi, Brian."
The voice was familiar, and I turned around. It was Angela. I just looked at her. She was smiling with that sassy smirk, and I wondered why on earth I'd ever given a damn about her. She was beautiful, little and dark, and even when suddenly all the girls had long straight hair, Hers hung to the middle of her waist in ringlets and curls. It was blue-black and shiny. Maybe all that heavy mass wouldn't look good on just anyone, but Angela had the kind of face that would probably be strikingly beautiful even if she shaved her head. But since I knew her so well, I could ignore the way she looked. "Hi, Angel," I said carelessly. "You here with Curtis?" I meant to rub it in. I think he was the first guy she ever went after and didn't get. Her face contorted for a second, and she called me a few names and flounced off. She wasn't famous for an even temper. "Who was that?" Kathy asked. I wondered if she was jealous. I hoped so, anyway. "This chick I used to go with," I answered. Kathy glanced indifferently after Angela.
"Certainly uses nice language," she remarked. "A real lady."
It hit me that Kathy wasn't jealous of Angela at all, not for her beauty or for having gone with me. She was the first girl I'd dated who wasn't scared some other chick would show her up. I didn't know what to make of it. In the end, I decided it showed that Kathy had more sense than most girls. I wasn't worried about her liking Mark anymore. I can tell when a girl is interested in a guy. Like the minute I saw Angela looking at Curtis, I knew. And I could tell Kathy liked Mark just as a friend, as the brother of the guy she was interested in. Kathy liked me. I could tell that already. She was a good dancer. We danced almost every dance. We were having so much fun, I forgot all about going out to Terry's car for some beer. They had a cop there at the dance, they always did, but he was ignoring the kids who were staggering around, obviously drunk. He was there just to prevent people from killing each other. Apparently, he wasn't even doing that much, because suddenly, above the music, we heard a scream from the back parking lot. Immediately, everyone started running out there to see what was happening. I didn't. I hate people who stand around at an accident and pry and push and peer. I won't even stop to watch a fight if I don't know either guy who's fighting. "Let's don't go," I said. Kathy nodded.
"Okay."
Just then Curtis pushed his way through the crowd. He had been one of the fighters, because his face was bruised and his lip was cut.
"Brian,"
he yelled when he saw me.
"Brian, come quick. Mark's hurt."
I went cold. Mark was hurt. I shoved my way through the crowd. I'm a pretty good size, and when I shove, I get through. There was a circle of people on the parking lot. I shoved through them, too. Mark was lying on the ground, unconscious. One side of his face was covered with blood. I knelt beside him. "Mark," I said, but he didn't move. He was out cold. I took the end of my shirt tail and wiped some of the blood off his face. He was bleeding from a bad gash on the side of his head, but that was the only injury I could see. Curtis knelt down on the other side of Mark.
"Is he all right?"
I shook my head. "Did anyone call an ambulance?" He nodded.
"I think the cop radioed for one."
I remembered the cop. I looked around for him. He had some kid in handcuffs a few feet away and was informing him of his rights. "Is that the guy who did this?" I asked, and the kid in handcuffs looked over at me. He had heard me.
"Yeah,"
Curtis said. I looked straight at that kid and said, "Buddy boy, you are dead. You would just better make up your mind to that. When I get through with you, you're gonna be dead." I meant it. I was mad. But the kid just looked away like he was indifferent. But he was shook. I could tell. "He meant to get me," Curtis said, "if that makes any difference." "If he'd gotten you, he'd be doing me a favor," I said. I didn't really mean it, but I was upset. Curtis gave me a wry grin, like he understood. For the first time, I felt I could like the guy. "What happened?" Curtis shook his head.
"I don't know. Mark and me were out here sitting on the car, not doing a thing, when this guy shows up and starts in on me. I don't know why, I ain't never seen the guy before. Finally he takes a swing at me, so I have to swing back, and pretty soon we're going at it. Then this character picks up a beer bottle Mark had thrown over there in the grass and comes at me with it. About that time, Mark steps in between us and says, "Hey, come on, man, fight fair." The kid just looks at him and for no reason cracks him across the side of the head with it. Then the cop shows up. Right in the nick of time, he added sarcastically. When I took another look at the kid in handcuffs, Angela was talking to him. I got the picture. She had got this guy to pick a fight with Curtis. She was mad at him for ignoring her. I changed my mind. It would be her I'd get even with, not that poor dope she'd used. "Do you know Angela Shepherd?" I asked Curtis. He shook his head. "No, I know her brothers pretty well, but I've never been around her much." He was telling the truth. Curtis really didn't know that Angela had been after him. He probably thought I had it in for him for no reason at all. "What does Angela have to do with this?" he asked. "I'll tell you later." Mark moved a little and groaned. "Mark," I said softly, "listen, don't move, just lie still. We're going to get you to the hospital." He opened his eyes. The pupils were so large that I could see only a faint ring of gold around them. I picked up one of his hands. It was ice cold. He was staring straight ahead and didn't seem to hear or see me. I was worried. "What's wrong with him?" "Shock," Curtis said. He took off his jacket and put it over Mark. I didn't have one, or I would have too. Mark was still bleeding. I couldn't stop it. It seemed that the ambulance would never get there. When it finally did, I rode in the back with Mark. At last he seemed to recognize me. "Brian?" he said. Then he sort of laughed and groaned at the same time. "Man, am I hurting." "Keep quiet," I said. I was almost crying, something I hadn't done in years. I was pretty worried. "Listen, Brian," Mark went on in a weak voice, "when we get there, at the hospital, stay with me, okay?" "I'm not taking this trip for the ride," I said. He closed his eyes. "Okay, just stay with me." At the hospital, they put 10 stitches in his head. The x-ray didn't show a fracture or anything, so they said we could go home. I didn't know how in the world we were going to get home. I'd left Charlie's car at the dance, and come to think of it, I'd left Kathy there, too. I was a little worried about that, but mostly, I was worried about getting Mark home. He was sitting up, but he was still groggy, and the painkiller shots he'd been given made him feel sleepy and high. He was probably still feeling all that beer he'd drunk at the dance, too. He was in bad shape. I thought about calling a taxi, but as it was, I didn't know how I was going to pay for the ambulance. I was rescued unexpectedly by Kathy and Curtis. Any other time, I would have been hacked off by the two of them showing up together, but right then, I was glad to see them. "I brought your car," Curtis said. "I figured you wouldn't have a way to get home. Is Mark going home?" "Yeah. They said for him to stay in bed for a couple of days and to come back in a couple of weeks or so to get the stitches out. Help me get him in the car."
"Hey, hey, hey, pony boy," Mark greeted him. "What are you doing here?"
Curtis and I pulled him to his feet and we each slung an arm across our shoulders. "Come on, buddy boy," I said. "Time to go home." Mark tried to walk, but almost fell, and we half-dragged, half-carried him out to the car. We got him stretched out in the back seat and climbed in. "Hey," I said suddenly, "how'd you start the car without any keys?" Kathy turned to him too.
"Yeah, how did you?"
He was getting red.
"I hot-wired it," he said finally. Mark showed me how 2 weeks ago. I almost laughed. That was just like Mark. Don't make that a habit, I said. Curtis shook his head. I've never done it before. I finally understood that Mark was right about that Curtis kid. He wasn't stuck up. He was shy. I dropped him off near his house. I hated to just take Kathy home, but there wasn't much else I could do. Mark was singing to himself in the back seat. He had a good voice, but he'd picked a lulu of a song. Kathy pretended not to hear it. I walked her to the door. I'm really sorry about the way things turned out, I said. She grinned. So am I, but thank goodness Mark isn't hurt any worse than he is. I had a good time. I really did. Especially driving to the hospital with Ponyboy. I looked at her quickly. She was teasing me to make me mad. Not really, she continued. He's not my type. Too quiet. That's one thing I'm not, I said. I wanted to kiss her, but I never know. Some girls will kiss on a first date, some won't. I decided to play it safe and not kiss her. Besides, the porch light was on, and there were 4 or 5 little faces peering out from behind the front room curtains. I'll call you, I said finally. By the time I got Mark home, the shots had worn off. Sweat was running down his face, and I think tears were, too. He gave me his typical grin. I ain't feeling so good, Brian, was the most he'd say. I helped him into the house and got him to bed. You going to be able to sleep? I asked when I turned out the lights. I don't think so. Man, have I got a headache. You tired, Brian? Nope, I said. I was sitting on the bed, leaning back against the wall, smoking a cigarette. The light of the moon was coming in the window, and I could see Mark clearly. He had one arm folded under his head and was staring up at the moon. Well, if you ain't going to sleep, and I ain't, why don't we talk for a while? That's fine by me, I said. You know, when I first came around tonight after that kid cracked me, I was scared stiff. I thought I was dying, I was so scared. I really felt weird. But after I got to thinking you were there with me, I calmed down. Brian, you're the only family I got. You know that? I mean, your mom's been great to me and everything, but I don't feel like she's really my old lady. But I feel like you're my brother. A real one. Mark had never had a real family. I remember once, when we were very young, I had remarked that he didn't look much like his father, and he said, "He ain't my real father. My real father was a cowboy here for the rodeo. The old lady said he had gold hair and gold eyes just like mine, and that he won all kinds of prizes at the rodeo." At the time, I just thought, "Gee, that's great, his real father is a cowboy." When I got older, I realized what that meant. That Mark was illegitimate. It had never seemed to bother him, but then nothing did. Maybe it had, and I just never knew it. I must still be high. Mark's voice broke the stillness. I don't know why I'm blabbering on like this. I always think of you as my brother, I said. I saw Mark's face in the moonlight. He was smiling. Chapter 4. Mark wasn't feeling any better the next day. When I asked him if his head still hurt, he said, "Yeah." That was typical of Mark, who never admitted to being in real pain. I called the doctor from a payphone, and all he said was that Mark would be in pain for a couple of days and that I should keep him quiet and give him aspirin. He was a big help. I took back Charlie's car and told him what had happened. He didn't seem too interested, but he was having his own troubles. He'd got his draft notice. I got home as soon as I could. I hated to leave Mark there all by himself. I didn't know which was bothering him most, the pain in his head or having to stay in bed. He probably would have tried to get up in spite of the doctor's orders, but he couldn't even sit up without getting dizzy. We didn't have the TV anymore, and Mark couldn't read too well. He couldn't even seem to get interested in poker.
"Why don't you read me a book?"
he suggested after I had racked my brains trying to think of something to do. "Read you a book?"
"Yeah. Don't you remember when we were little? You used to read me books all the time."
Mark was too lazy or too uninterested to read himself. He had never bothered to learn how to read very well in the first place. This probably accounted for his poor grades at school, because he was every bit as smart as I was. I had read cowboy books to him when we were little, when we were both going to be cowboys. Books like Lone Cowboy by Will James. We'd climb the tree in the backyard, and I'd read aloud, and then we'd play cowboys.
"Do you remember?" Mark said.
Somehow, we spent the whole afternoon talking about when we were little kids. We had played a kid's version of gang fighting called Civil War, and then later, we had got in on the real thing. We fought with chains, and we fought barefisted, and we fought Sochas, and we fought other grease gangs. It was a normal childhood. I used to be able to get all uptight about a fight, look forward to it. Nowadays, it was getting a little boring. Mark had a great memory, better than mine, which is pretty good, and he brought up little goofy things we had done when we were young that I'd forgotten about. Like the time we climbed over the back fence at a drive-in movie and got caught. The drive-in manager put us in the back of a pickup truck to take us to the police station, but we jumped out while he was doing 30 miles an hour. Somehow, neither of us was killed. We always wondered what that guy thought when he got to the police station and there was nobody in his truck. We'd get up on the roof of a two-story shopping center and shoot water pistols at the people passing below, then have a good time running from the cop Mark had so thoughtfully drenched. We always had a car in those days, thanks to Mark's hot-wiring abilities. We'd take something that looked fast and go to the expressway and drag. It was sheer luck that when Mark was finally caught doing this, he was alone. I could have been booked, too. And mixed up between these episodes were poker games, sometimes drunken ones lasting all night, and pool games. I was a pool hustler at a very early age. And dates and parties and beer blasts on the dry riverbed. We were always with a bunch of guys. Sometimes it was the same bunch for a year or two. Then people would drift away. Usually if anyone got a steady girl, it cut down on a lot of goofing around with the guys. And different people would drift in. But Mark was always the hub of this circle of people, and I was always with Mark.
"We've had some good times, huh, Brian?"
Mark broke the silence. I guess we both had been reminiscing. "Yeah," I said. I was sitting in my favorite position on the bed, leaning against the wall with my knees up, resting an elbow on my knee and dangling a cigarette.
"Do you ever get the feeling that the whole thing is changing? Like something's coming to an end because something else is beginning?"
"Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Like now, I couldn't care less about Angela, and I can remember when she seemed like the most important thing on earth."
"That's it,"
Mark said excitedly, forgetting about his head and starting to sit up. He remembered suddenly, because he yelped and lay back down with a rueful grin.
"Like we got into those gang fights. It was so important. It was the whole world if we won or lost. And the buddies we had then. We were like brothers, not just you and me, but all of us together. We would have died for each other then. And now, everybody's kind of slipped away. And then, we would have died for each other. Really, man, remember? It was great.
We were a bunch of people making up one big person, like we totaled up to something when we were together.
Now we total up to something by ourselves, just as easy, I said. I understood exactly what he was talking about. Mark had the habit of thinking the way I did. The difference was that he said it, and I usually didn't.
Yeah, but still, don't you kind of miss that one-for-all, all-for-one routine? It's kind of sad, really, when you get to where you don't need a gang. I mean, like you did before.
It's kind of a good thing, too, I said, when you know your own personality so you don't need the one the gang makes for you.
Yeah, Mark sighed. But there's a difference. I wonder what the difference is.
The difference is, I said evenly, that was then, and this is now. Mark flashed me that lion-like grin.
Brian, you are brilliant.
We didn't say much the rest of the afternoon. We were thinking. Mark missed one day of school. He still wasn't feeling real great by Monday, but I decided I could go anyway. He wasn't sick enough for me to stay home with him. The fight had made Mark something of a hero, and the whole story was going around school in various versions, all different. Some of them were pretty funny. Everyone was mad at Angela, sympathized with Curtis, who had been in a lot of trouble before and was a kind of folk hero, and made a big deal out of Mark stepping in to keep the fight fair. When people asked me what happened, I told them, but I could see they were going to believe what they wanted to believe, and hearing the truth wasn't going to change their minds. People are generally like that. I was in a funny mood Monday. The talk I had had with Mark really got to me. I felt like I was standing apart from all the rest of the kids and just watching. It was like I could see through them, see what they were thinking and why they did things, and it was really weird. I went to a big high school. It graduated about 700 kids, and the senior class was the smallest class, so you can see how big it really was. Its district included a real crummy part of town, ours, and a pretty ritzy part of town. This can make for problems. It used to, anyway, with the Sochas beating up the Greasers. But in these days, with all that love, peace, and groove stuff, the fights had slacked off. Besides, it was hard now to tell a Soch from a Greaser. Now the Greasers wore their hair down on their foreheads instead of combed back. This went for Mark and me, too. And the Sochas were trying to look poor. They wore old jeans and shirts with the shirt tails out, just like the Greasers always had because they couldn't afford anything else. I'll tell you one thing, though. What with fringed leather vests and Levi's with classy store labels in them, those kids were spending as much money to look poor as they used to look rich. It was crazy. There was another crazy thing I noticed for the first time that Monday. I'm a smart kid, so I was put in classes with other smart kids. Most of these guys were what we used to call Sochas. They were always friendly toward me, and I'd gone to quite a few parties at their houses and dated some of their chicks. All this time I had thought, well, they like me. I'm big, friendly, wise guy Brian, so they like me. Now I saw it clearly. They didn't like me. The truth is, they were probably scared of me. But I was a poor white, and they were liberals, so I got invited to the parties so everyone could see what hip, hip people they were. I had always wondered why at those parties people were always trying to get me to talk about politics and junk I'd never heard of. I don't keep up on those things. When I read, I like stuff like Hemingway. Newspapers bore me. I lead with my left, and that's about as much as I know about left, right, and so on. I have a vague notion that the left is hippie and the right is hick, but I really don't know much else. Now I knew. That Monday I could see through people, and I knew what was going on. I figured if I'd been a black, I'd have been twice as popular, but integration in our school wasn't really swinging yet,
and there weren't very many Negroes there. These guys would probably have offered me their sister's hands in marriage if I'd been black. I knew some Negroes, some really cool fighters out in Brumley. I'd have to remember to take a couple along to the next party with me. Then they could talk about the Black Revolution and the Panthers, which they knew as much about as I did right and left. I walked around the whole day laughing to myself. It was just that day. The next day I wondered what had hit me to make me act like that. And when I saw these Soch guys, they were just guys, friends of mine. And of course they asked me to their homes because we were friends. We were in the same English class and we got along. They were sincerely trying to change the world for the better. That was why they talked politics. They wore those clothes because that was their bag. That's what I thought the next day. But not Monday. That Monday I knew. Mark got better and went back to school. He went to school for lack of something better to do, because he sure didn't dig it the way I did. We didn't usually see each other much at school. We were never in the same classes. We walked to school together and usually got a ride home together with someone, but lots of times we didn't see each other until we got home. So when Mark didn't show up for a while one afternoon the following week, I wasn't worried. He could have been any number of places. I didn't happen to guess the right one. He was at the police station. I didn't know about it until Terry Jones came by. Terry was short, round, and a real nut.
"Brian!" he yelled as he came running through the front door. "Hey, Brian, did you hear what happened to Mark?"
I was making a peanut butter and honey sandwich. I didn't get shook because something is always happening to Mark.
"What? And calm down, for Pete's sake, I ain't deaf." "Okay," Terry said carelessly.
He sat down in a chair and looked around.
"Having dinner?"
"Cut it, man. What happened to Mark?"
"Not much. He just got caught driving the principal's car."
I gagged.
"What?" I said when I could talk. "He got caught doing what?" "The principal had to leave school early today for some reason. He gets to his parking place and no car. And then guess who shows up with it? Your friend and mine, Mark."
"You gotta be kidding," I begged. "Man, Terry, tell me you're kidding. Mark's on probation now for car stealing."
"That's the reason he was driving it," Terry said. "Can I have a sandwich?"
"Here." I shoved the peanut butter, honey, and bread at him. "Fix it yourself. Only first, if you don't want your head busted, tell me what's going on."
"I happened to be standing around when the aforementioned incident occurred."
It figured. Terry was usually standing around.
"And I hear Mark explain to the principal, while the cops are being called, that he has to go down to see his probation officer once a week and tell him how he ain't gonna steal no more cars. The deal is, he don't have no way to get downtown. There ain't no buses at that time, he don't have a car, and there ain't enough time to walk since he's on his lunch hour. So he borrows the principal's car, drives down to see the probation officer, and drives back. He's been doing this since school started, and if the principal didn't have to leave early today, he'd be doing it yet."
"I don't believe it," I said slowly. "He's gonna be in jail for the rest of his life."
"I doubt it," Terry said, starting in on his second sandwich. "The principal was laughing by the time Mark got through talking to him."
I breathed a sigh of relief. Mark would come through. Even this. And as if to prove this to me, Mark came strolling in.
"Guess where I've been. Got anything else to eat?"
"Let me see," I said. "Ah, yes. I see it in a vision. You were at the police station explaining how you had to borrow the principal's car because you had to see your probation officer."
"Terry told you, huh? Well, it's all straightened out now. The probation officer drives down to pick me up from now on. It was just one of those failures to communicate."
Mark sat down across the table from me, eating an apple. He was trying to look ashamed of himself, but it just wasn't coming off.
I was trying to look disgusted with him, but that wasn't working either.
I'm sorry, he said finally.
No, you ain't, I said. We were quiet for a while. Terry got up and left. He must have thought me and Mark were going to have a fight.
Listen, man,
Mark began, but I cut him off. Shut up, okay? As long as they ain't doing nothing to you, it's okay. I guess you can get away with anything. Mark leaned back in his chair. The sun came through the small kitchen window and glinted on his eyes, turning them a bright yellow.
I guess so, Mark said.
He smiled, like an innocent lion. Chapter 5. The first time Mom knew anything about Mark being hurt was when we visited her in the hospital and she saw the stitches in his head. They were real noticeable against his gold hair. She just said,
"How did that happen?"
And Mark answered, "Fight." And the subject was dropped. That was a good thing about Mom. She'd cry over a dog with a piece of glass in his paw, but remained unhysterical when we came home clobbered. About fights, she'd say, "Don't fight at school. You'll get expelled." About drinking,
"I'd rather you didn't."
So around her, we didn't. She didn't know about some of the rest of the stuff we did. The pool games, the poker, the gang fights, the dry riverbed parties. But in that respect, she wasn't any different from any other mother. Parents never know what all their kids do. Not in the old days, not now, not tomorrow. It's a law. We stopped in to see that kid, Mike, the one who'd been beaten up so bad. He looked worse than he had before. He said his old man had been in and chewed him out. The doctor had promised him that his father wouldn't be allowed to come to see him anymore, but he was still shook. He looked like a nervous wreck, as well as a physical one. "I wish I was dead, or somebody else," he said. "You just don't say things like that." I didn't stay long. Things like that depressed me. Mark stayed on to see if he could cheer up Mike. I wanted to go to the snack bar and see Kathy anyway. She looked as cute as ever. She said,
"Hi, Brian."
Not too eager, but friendly enough. I had called her a few times in the last couple of weeks and walked to her house to see her, but we hadn't been out. I didn't have a car, and Charlie was still so mad about getting his draft notice that I didn't have the nerve to ask him for his car again. As a matter of fact, he was in such a rotten mood that I stayed away from his place altogether. We were friends, and I didn't think he'd ever take his temper out on me, but with big guys, it's safer to be careful. "I'm on my break now," Kathy said, looking at the clock. This was an invitation for me to buy her a soda, so I said obligingly, "Want a Coke?"
"I knew you'd say that," Kathy said.
She came around to my side of the counter and sat down next to me. I never could get over her honesty. Girls are usually careful not to let you know what they're thinking. Kathy hadn't dated before. Maybe that was why she was so open. She didn't tell me that, about not dating, of course. I found out from Eminem. I found out a lot of things from Eminem. I've never known anyone so unsuspicious as that little kid. He'd trust Jack the Ripper. He was a believer. I kept comparing Kathy to Angela. I guess because out of all the girls I've dated, I started at 13, they were the two I liked best. I don't know if "like" is the right word for how I felt about Angela. I'd been wrapped up in her. I had to see her every day. I had to talk to her 10 times a day on the phone. But now, looking back on it, I don't remember ever liking her. Kathy was smart, but Angela knew more. That was strange. They both had guts. I can't stand chicken girls. But in different ways.
Kathy wasn't afraid to do what she wanted. Angela wasn't afraid of any boy on earth. Kathy wasn't afraid of any other girl. They were both gutsy in different ways. My main problem with Kathy was that she liked me, and I wanted her to be crazy about me. I'm like that. I have a very bad ego hang-up.
"Guess who called me?" Kathy said. "Pony Boy Curtis. He wanted to go out Friday night."
"No kiddin'," I said, while thinking, "I'll murder that guy." "What'd you tell him?"
"I said I was busy." "Am I?"
I was stunned again, but didn't show it.
"You are.
I'll pick you up at 7.
I had no idea what I was going to pick her up in, or where we'd go after I did pick her up, but I figured I could work that out later.
"We're going hustling," I told Mark as we walked home trying to hitch a ride. This time no friendly hippie showed up to give us a lift.
"Okay.
Tonight. For money."
"You'll need some money to get started with," Mark said, lighting a cigarette.
"I'll get it." We ran into Eminem at the drugstore, and, as usual, he was chomping on that crazy candy. At least he wasn't staring into the bag like it contained the 8th wonder of the world.
"I need some money," I said, deciding not to beat around the bush. "You got any?"
He looked at me with those serious war orphan eyes.
"I've got $5, he said. "I raked some lawns to get it."
I used to think he and Kathy looked an awful lot alike, but not anymore. Sure, they both had those big charcoal eyes and matching hair, but Kathy laughed more. Her expression usually twinkled with humor. Eminem rarely smiled, and he always looked puzzled, serious, and trusting.
"That's a good deal. Can you loan it to me? Just for tonight, I'll pay you back tomorrow."
He pulled out his billfold and took all the money out of it.
"Be sure not to forget to give it back tomorrow. I need it, okay?"
"Kid, have I ever given you a dirty deal?" I said, winking at Mark.
"No,"
Eminem said, and went back to his magazine. I never could figure that kid out. I liked him, though. Partly because he was Kathy's brother, partly because he was a good kid, and partly because he had lived to a nice old age in our neighborhood. For a sucker. Mark had given him back his peace symbol. It hung around his neck on the rawhide string, and Eminem kept twisting it absent-mindedly. I wondered if his father still gave him a bad time because of his hair. We decided to hit Charlie's place first. Charlie grinned and waved at us when we came in, so I figured he was over his bad mood about being drafted.
"Guess what?"
he said, just like a kid. It was the first time I'd ever seen him act like a kid.
"They're not gonna take me."
"How come?"
Mark asked, plopping down at the bar.
"Bad knee from playing football?"
Charlie shook his head.
"Nah, because of my police record."
"You got a record?" I said. "I didn't know that. What'd you do?"
"When I was 12 years old, I cut a guy's throat. You mean here to play pool?"
I still don't know if Charlie was telling the truth or just kidding us. Sort of telling us that it was none of our business what his police record was for. Either was possible.
"Yeah, we're here to play pool. Any possibilities?"
Charlie nodded toward the pool room. "There's a couple of guys in there. I watched them a little. You can take them."
"Good enough," I said, sliding off the stool. "Hey, wait a minute,"
Charlie said. We turned.
"Would it do any good to tell you to be careful?"
"Nope," said Mark bluntly.
Charlie kind of laughed and sighed at the same time.
"I didn't think so."
We played pool until 12 o'clock that night. The two guys we played against were tough characters, out-of-towners from Texas. At first we played partners, me and Mark losing by a couple of balls.
Then Mark started his routine about wanting to go home.
Come on, Brian, you lost all the money you can spare.
While I played the eager kid.
I know I can win the next game.
Then we played singles. I played the better of the two, a weather-beaten guy in his 20s who looked like an ex-con. For all I know, he was. I don't know where else he could have picked up his lingo, because he used the worst language I've ever heard, and I've heard plenty. I was careful not to win at first, and then, when I did start winning, I only made it by a few balls so it'd look like an accident. But once I started winning, I didn't quit. By midnight, I had $25.50.
You're a darn good pool player, Dirty Dave said. He'd told us that was his name, or words to that effect.
His friend, who'd been standing around drinking beer for the last 3 hours, mumbled something about being too good for his own good, but Dirty Dave shut him up.
Closing time, Charlie said.
He didn't have any other customers but us by that time. He had been watching the game for the last hour and a half.
We're leaving.
Mark was sitting on the table of a booth and drinking a beer. I don't know where he got it, and from the surprised look Charlie gave him, Charlie didn't know where he got it either.
See you around, kids,
the Texans said as they sauntered out. I was busy counting my money, and Mark was stretching his legs.
So the hustler strikes again, Charlie said. How much did you get?
Enough. Can I borrow your car again sometime?
I guess so, just as long as you buy gas.
Come on, beat it, I got some work to do.
Next time you sneak a beer, Golden Boy, you're gonna get stomped on.
I didn't sneak nothing. I simply walked over and drew a beer.
I can't help it if you didn't see it.
I left a quarter on the cash register.
You're good at being invisible, man. Because anybody gets within 10 feet of that cash register, I know it.
You're getting blind in your old age,
Mark said, apparently not caring if he got stomped on or not. I gave him a warning look, and he obediently shut up. I wasn't taking any chances. We left as soon as we could. We didn't get far. Two dark shapes stepped out of the alley next to Charlie's, and a voice drawled, "Step right into the alley, kiddies." I froze, because the voice was Dirty Dave's. I thought about making a run for it, but the voice said, "I got a gun." So I decided not to. I still didn't move. Mark suddenly said,
"We don't want to see the alley.
We've seen it before."
And he sounded like he was trying not to laugh.
"We're going to give you a lesson on why not to hustle pool. Just step into the alley. Now."
I glanced at Mark over my shoulder. He shrugged like he was saying, "What else can we do?" So we walked past the Texans into the alley. I was beginning to shake. I was having visions of my thumbs being chopped off or my arms being broken. Things like that happen to hustlers. When we reached the dead end of the alley, we turned and faced the Texans. The one guy was holding a gun on us while Dirty Dave was putting on some brass knuckles. I could just picture what my face was going to look like when he got through with me. I suddenly remembered Mark, who hadn't done anything but get me started. "Let Mark go," I said, and my voice was steady. I was surprised. I thought it would be shaking as bad as I was.
"He didn't do nothing."
Mark said quietly,
"I'm not going anywhere."
And Dave said,
"You better believe it. You were setting him up, and when I get through with Hustler here, I'm going to give you a lesson, too."
"Brass knuckles, guns, or whatever," Mark said in a voice I couldn't even recognize as Mark's. "You'll know you've been in a fight if you tangle with me."
"I'm really scared, kid," he said.
My eyes were used to the dim light by now. I could see past the Texans into the street. I was praying for a police car. something I never thought I'd ever do. Dave took a step toward me. I backed up against the alley wall. I was afraid that if I moved to grab up something to fight with, the other guy would shoot me. Just at that moment, somebody stepped into the other end of the alley, and a voice said, "Drop the gun and freeze. I got a sawed-off shotgun here, and I'd hate to scatter dirt all over this nice clean alley." It was Charlie. I never thought I'd be so glad to see anyone. "Brian, Mark, come on out of there." We couldn't resist smirking a little as we walked past the Texans. Even in the dark, I could see the anger contorting their faces. It should have warned me, but it didn't. "Thanks, Charlie," Mark said as we reached him. "You're a real pal."
"I hope you two learn something from this," Charlie began. But before we knew what was happening, one of the Texans made a dive for the gun and fired at us. Charlie slammed both of us to the ground, but in an instant, Mark freed himself, grabbed up the shotgun Charlie had dropped, and fired back at the Texans, who were scrambling over the alley wall. It all happened so quickly that I was trying to figure out what I was doing on the ground with my ears ringing from the blast before I realized what had taken place. Mark was swearing, and in the dim light, he didn't even look like Mark. He looked perfectly capable of murder. His only regret was that he had missed. I didn't have any similar regrets. If he had missed, well, so had they. You can't feel too bad when you could have been dead but aren't.
"You can get off me now, Charlie," I said.
Charlie didn't move. I rolled out from under him.
"Hey, man, come on," I said.
Then in the white, sickly light from the streetlights, I saw that there was a neat, perfect hole above Charlie's left eye. He was dead. I wouldn't talk about what had happened to anyone but Kathy and Mark. The next few weeks it seemed as if I was moving in slow motion while other people were speeded up. Mom came home from the hospital, and I flunked chemistry, and Angela got married to some creep friend of her brother's. I called Kathy every day. Mark was the one who explained everything to the police. The police were very impressed with Charlie's having saved our lives and all that. They were local cops who had known and liked him anyway. They told us we could have his car. I took it because I figured he would have given it to us if he had had the time. I guess I was acting pretty strange during those weeks, because one day Mark said,
"Look it, man. Charlie knew what kind of people came into his bar. Why do you think he kept a shotgun handy? He knew those cowboys had a gun. He knew what kind of chance he was taking."
"He told us to be careful," I said. I couldn't get it out of my mind. Charlie's warning us about hustling.
"He didn't have to try to get us off the hook. Mark, can't you see? This ain't some story, some TV show, bang, you're dead, big deal. This is the real thing. Charlie is dead. He was all set for life. He wasn't going to get drafted. He had his business. He was all set. And then we blew it for him." "We didn't blow nothing, Brian. Things happen. That's all there is to it."
"Not things like that," I said.
That was then, this is now, Disc 2.
I thought Saturday would never come, but it finally did. I hadn't looked forward to a date in a long time. With Angela, after a while our dates either ended in a make-out session or a fight. Both got boring. I was kind of bothered about what to wear. It was a casual dance, so about anything would be all right, but I was bugged anyway. I was in the bathroom shaving when Mark popped in. He had been down to Charlie's to pick up the car for me.
"Hey, hey, hey," he leaned in the doorway, grinning at me. "Take it all off."
"You're just jealous because you only have to shave once every 2 weeks." Mark refused to be bugged.
You think I want to scrape my face every day? Thanks, but no thanks. I glanced at